DJ Eskimo City, the coolest DJ on the motherfucking planet. Dude.
I pour up yellow tuss, I pour up yellow tuss. Cause I gotta have it.
Yeah. Interesting.
I pour up yellow tuss, I pour up yellow tuss. Cause I gotta have it. Stacks hit us at the mattress. Racks hit us at the mattress. Packs hit us at the mattress. Gangs hit us at the mattress. Vert dipping through traffic. I'm getting better, I'm at practice. I'm working every day crafting. I'm cool on her, I done had her. Bounce back with a million. Hit her out of like Gilligan. Not just a regular civilian. I rap by the squad, I'm a champion. Remember we hit up the highway, we got a stash spot. Remember, as soon as we touch down, nigga, cash out. I get on the stage and rap till I pass out. Hit another city, I'm just grooving. I was trying to tell you I was losing. I was gonna tell you I'm improving. I done caught a vibe, she was choosing. Gotta keep my pride, I'm a general. Gotta keep it real with some criminals. Gotta keep my focus, I'm phenomenal. Once I cock it load, I'm the money man. Got 100 hoes, got 100 zans. We gon' party hard till the moon comes. She done fell in love with the mushrooms. Got my college girls, I can kung fu. Put some cold syrup in the Mountain Dew. You would never see what I go through. Gotta keep my vibe, I'm a general. Gotta keep it real with some criminals. Gotta take my time with these bad bitches. I don't wind and dine with no bad bitches. Send a flight for a bad bitch. Overnight for a bad bitch. Cartier on a bad
bitch.
Cartier on a bad bitch. Stacks hit us at the mattress. Racks hit us at the mattress. Packs hit us at the mattress.
Are you a current UBC grad student? If so, then listen up, because the Graduate Student Society lets UBC grads book rooms and spaces in the newly renovated grad student building. Be sure to take advantage of what the facility has to offer. The rooms come equipped with sound systems and can host up to 300 people. Even better, as grad students, you don't have to pay booking fees. Not a grad? Don't worry. The Tia Corner House is open to the public, as in the Kerner Pub, opening earlier next year. For more information, contact booking manager Rob at bookings@gss.ubc.ca.
Spikes embrace my spine, my face, my cunt. I can feel myself from above, but I can't see who's holding them. It would be easy to think about submission, but I don't think it's about submission. It's about holding and being held.
I've been hearing about her, wondering about her, how's she doing, how's she doing far away. I've been walking around, checking around all those places you never go anymore. But
hello, hello, hello.
Yo,
Good evening, you're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. And coming up right afterwards is the White Noise After Show, this week hosted by myself and special friend Connor Heckelbert. How are you doing, Connor?
Very well. I've been upgraded to friend, which I'm quite ecstatic about.
I thought that was better. Rather than special guest, we'll call him special friend.
It's a change. It's fresh and new and exciting.
You don't sound that enthused about it. I thought it was a good improvement, but...
Sorry, I genuinely thought I was.
Sorry, that was you being excited.
So would you want me to try again?
No, not particularly.
Because I can. I'm so excited!
No, you're just being patronising.
Patronising.
All right, and just a quick reminder, you can keep up with the White Noise Show all throughout the week on Twitter and Facebook at White Noise UBC. And you can also check out the best of at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. But without further ado, it's time for a half hour of sketch comedy. Yes, it's time for the White Noise Show.
Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Greg's Gluten-Free Desserts. None of the taste, but none of the diarrhea. First up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. All right, Carl.
Not really. I lost my job already.
How?
I shipped 10,000 Viagra instead of Vicodin. Now half of London's walking around with sad faces and a hard-on.
Ah, well, I've got a new plan. We're going to go and claim disability.
How are we going to do that?
Well, just hold still a second.
What? No, please, no, Neil, no!
Ah!
Sorry, Neil, you know my hands are deadly weapons.
Since when?
Well, that's what my mum said.
Next.
Good afternoon.
Name?
My name is Neil, and this is my associate, Mr. Carl Weathers.
Is he your partner?
We do work well together.
But are you a couple? You know, lovers?
Well, there was that one time.
Carl, please be quiet. Do we get more money if we are a couple?
After taxes, yes.
What taxes?
Shut up. Yeah. We're lovers. Together. Ooh, nearly 6 years.
No, we met in primary school. Neil used to spit on my face every day before class.
What?
It was just a bit of, like, foreplay.
Whatever. It isn't my job to understand gay culture.
Neil's got some of those magazines if you want to lend them.
Shut up, darling.
So what disability claim are you making?
Well, obviously, I have this black eye, and I've also got chlamydia.
And I've got this terrible itch.
Yeah, that's the chlamydia, Carl.
No, this one's higher up. I can't remember.
Well, you can't claim disability for a black eye or a chlamydia.
What about if I had, AIDS?
Possibly.
Well, that's an option. What's the least painful disability I could claim for?
Well...
Piles.
Sorry?
Piles. That's what I have.
Oh, that's what that cream in the bathroom's for.
Yeah.
I thought it was toothpaste.
No, it's Crest's Piles Cream. Makes your arse smell minty fresh.
I think you guys might be eligible for disability.
Oh, really?
Yes, there's money put aside to aid people such as yourselves who are mentally challenged.
We are not.
Going to turn down this money. Would that be cash or cheque? A lot of people assume I claim disability, but I don't. I just like the way I look in a wheelchair. Makes me feel like Professor X. Next up tonight, Elvis and Bono are back.
Good evening, Elvis and Bono. Sorry for making you work a weekend.
Ah, not a problem. Sunday is the Lord's Day, and the Lord loves a good ass-kicking.
Ah, Sundays. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Ah, Jesus, he's not gonna sing, is he?
Now calm down, I haven't sung since New Year's Day.
Is that meant to be funny?
No, it's because of the vertigo.
Ah, just shut the hell up, you limey bastard.
I'm Irish, you idiot.
Yeah, whatever, same difference.
Whatever, you Canadian.
Oh, you wanna go, buddy? Is that it? You want me to show you some freedom right here, right now, Hulk Hogan style?
Knock it off. You're both equally terrible. Can we just get on with it?
Fine, whatever, dude.
Please continue. You have the Lord's blessing.
Ah, come on, seriously?
As I was saying, the reason we have had to bring you in on a weekend is due to the sudden revealing of shocking information. We've gotten intel that Wimbledon matches have been fixed.
Dear God!
What the fuck is Wimbledon?
It's an annual tennis tournament, part of the Grand Slam.
Grand Slam? Is that something to do with Denny's?
No, this issue is very sensitive for our British allies. Well, at least the rich ones. Especially the Queen. She PVRs all the matches. Apparently she likes the noises.
Don't we all?
And to reinforce that point, she has left you a message I will play for you now. If I can just find the tape. Ah. Hello, I'm Adrian Lexington, and I want to be the next Bachelor.
Oh, wrong tape.
That was a good start.
Oh, thanks.
Good evening, Mr. Presley and Mr. Hewson.
It's pronounced Bono.
Shh!
We have uncovered a black mark on the white dress of our country. We need you both to find the culprits and give them a Chelsea kiss.
Huh?
That is where you cut the git in the corner of their mouths and then punch them in the stomach, spitting their cheeks.
Jesus Christ!
It is imperative that you mess these gentlemen up real bad. We need to show them whose face is on their money. If you need any assistance, call me on my mobile. I should be in all night, but I might have to pop to the shop for fags later. The British kind, not the rainbow kind. Good luck, and give them one for me, chaps.
Okay. Did we get all that?
One question. Who are the match fixers?
Well, isn't it obvious? It's that Harry kid.
It's Prince Harry? I knew the redhead was evil.
No, it's Harry Styles.
Who?
Bono, explain.
I haven't got a fucking clue.
From One Direction.
What's that? Travel company?
A band.
No, they're not. I've heard them.
Whatever. Not the point. Just go kick that tween idol's ass.
Fine. But I gotta take a shit first. 5 more minutes.
Ah, the British countryside. Almost as nice as Ireland.
Nah, it smells like my Uncle John, who couldn't get out of bed no more.
I love coming out here to shoot.
Oh, like rabbits?
No, the locals.
So, how's the new artificial legs?
Faster than the old ones, but the penis is smaller, though it is adjustable.
How do you take it down?
Badly. Ah, here it is. Styles Manor.
Man, looks more like a fortress.
Keeps out the crazy fans. Paul McCartney has a moat and pit bulls.
Pit bulls?
Well, he only had to get them after Heather Mills left.
So, how do we get in?
It's an ambush!
Ah, it's fine by me. Let them bring the fight. I hate walking. That's my grit.
What's grit?
That's something you say when you're shooting.
Take out that RPG.
Ah, time for some of my homemade C4. Eat this. Okay, man?
Ah, my new legs! You broke my frickin' legs again!
Oh, god damn it. Oh, man, they're gonna make me take that health and safety course again.
Good evening, gentlemen.
It's 3 p.m.
Are you disrespecting Harry Styles?
Oh, you can't slap a paraplegic.
I don't care if you drive an ambulance.
That's a paramedic.
Shut up.
Hey, calm down, Harry Potter.
You want some too, fat man?
Hey, easy, buddy.
What are you going to do about it? I'm more powerful than half the nations of the world. Do you know how much money I've made since...
Oh, goddamn, he was annoying.
Elvis, what have you done?
So what if I didn't give him the Chelsea tickle?
The Chelsea kiss?
Ah, whatever, dude. I don't care if it was the Chelsea blowjob. Killing him is just as good.
Simon Cowell is gonna kill us.
No, he ain't. I got a plan.
Presenting One Direction.
Here we go.
You're insecure, don't know what for. You're turning heads when you walk through the door. Don't need makeup to cover up. Being the way you are is enough, baby. Come on. Everyone else in the room can see it, yeah. Everyone else but you, I still got it. Baby, you light me up like nobody else. The way you flip your hair gets...
That tune is catchier than Ebola. Next up tonight, there's a bit of a fight.
Honey, I want a cat.
How about a caterpillar?
You can't pet a caterpillar.
Yes, you can. Just very carefully.
No way.
How about a catamaran?
A boat?
Yeah, we can be pirates and get shot by the Navy.
No.
What about a cat scan? Maybe those migraines you get are tumors.
No, I'm fine.
Or a cattered holiday?
No.
Or a cattle prod?
I already have one. We somehow ended up buying one last week.
Or a cathator.
For what?
If you're feeling lazy.
Hang on, what are we actually talking about?
I don't remember, darling. Let's watch Netflix.
Oh, Garfield's on here. We should get a cat.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I don't like cats. I much prefer Danny. Next up tonight, we hear the world premiere of an interview with the legendary Jethro Babel.
Good evening and welcome to Legends of Rock, not to be confused with the much more popular geological knowledge-based show on PBS. This is about the music, and tonight's guest is no stranger to the limelight. It's Jethro Babel.
Good evening, Helen! And might I say, first, that I am actually a much bigger fan of the Lemonlight.
So, Jethro, tell us about your experiences over the years.
Well, it was back in the 70s that I was at the peak of my career. Damn, it was so awesome. I was playing sold-out stadium gigs every other Tuesday. I always did them then, so no one else had anything good going on. Then they started Cheap Tuesday at the movies. Nearly ruined me. The one thing I can tell you is you'll never be able to understand the sensation of walking out into an arena full of people screaming my name. There was 500 of them packing the Nairobi National Stadium. And it is crazy, as you stand there, stroking the shaft, letting your fingers caress those four magic strings, and when your fingers give in, switching to the tongue, and you know that for those few minutes, the world bends over for you alone. It opens up for you, submits to your will. It's hard to forget experiences like that. Thrashing about center stage, solos, hearing people promise to name their drunken mistakes after you, women flashing their breasts. I hear that happens sometimes. Did you know that I had David Bowie asking me for advice? John Lennon, Burt Bacharach, Madonna, Tilda Bagless, Jorm the Necro Butcher Stubbard. They were inspired by me. Wonderwall was a song I wrote on an LSD-fueled bender. And then I lost it to Liam and Noel Gallagher in a game of Russian roulette. Liam lost the first round, but Noel won the rematch. That explains Liam, of course. And it's not quite the same when you take it from a ukulele and transfer it to guitar. But you have to give credit to the lads for making it work. They must have made, like, at least $100 off of that record. Problem is, over time I got too big for my moccasins. I split with my band. Went solo. Started wearing a suit on stage. Sometimes backwards. Sometimes inside out. Sometimes upside down. And even once, I just let the suit go on stage and speak for itself. God, that was a bad idea. It got a standing ovation and ditched me. It went on to win 3 Grammys and changed its name to Kanye West. I tried turning my uke into a key uke. A ukulele key. I thought I could change the face of music. Forever. But the face of music forgot who I was. Actually, so did my mom for a bit. Though that might have been the stroke. Those were dark years. I thought I was experimenting, but I was really just lying in my own filth for 15 years, trying to get music out of a badly tuned ukulele key. I lost my place among the idols. I found it among the winos. My last release, an 18-song, 2.5-hour epic that I self-produced in my squat. I sold 4 copies. To my social worker. I haven't had a paid gig in ages. I tried to start up with some local guys, you know, rekindle what I lost. But before we could hammer down a good recording, prom got completely in the way, and I never saw him after that. You used to be able to hear my music in every corner of the world. Now you can only hear it in the corner of Wreck Beach. All's not lost, though. My comeback is on the horizon. I've linked up with a producer who calls himself Skrill Rex, and soon we're going to release a ukulele dubstep single. We're going to kill it. At least in Hawaii.
Thank you, Jethro. This was Legends of Rock, and we will be back next week with noted pianist and meth freak, Chopin.
Wow, that was not my cup of tea. I'm more of a fan of dubstep. It's dubstep with bad voiceovers. Next up tonight, it's time for a writer's Q&A.
Been waiting for, if you live in your mother's basement. It's Star Wars versus Star Trek. It's George Lucas versus Gene Roddenberry. It's time to decide who created the best series. We will hear opening statements from both and then open the floor to questions. George first.
I created Star Wars by first watching The Hidden Fortress and then copying it. That's how you know it's the best. It's an improvement upon the original foreign design. I just added all the sweet spaceship and incest stuff. I had robots, bikini women, and John Williams soundtrack. Star Wars is the complete package. Betrayal, sacrifice, lasers. And to be clear, I'm talking about the original 3 movies. Let's ignore the other 3 and that abortion they just made. I want to win this debate.
Okay, Gene next.
I'm going to make this very simple. Star Trek, the original series, wins hands down. It has far more depth, philosophy, real-life applications, and relatability. Yes, it's in space, but it's talking about real shit, racism, relationships, sexism, and doing aliens. No, it doesn't have a John Williams soundtrack, but that's cheating anyway. I mean, he can make a fart seem enchanting. What I did had substance. Captain Kirk is an everyman. He just wants to be loved. And if the lover is green, yes, so be it. I explored reality in the abyss. I explored the stars to explore us. I gave you fact in fiction. And lastly, I was fucking first, you goddamn copycat.
All right, questions from the audience? Yes, you, the fat nerd. No, not you. You. No, not you. The one at the end. Couldn't you all wear something distinctive, for goodness sake?
Hi, yes. My question is for Mr. Lucas.
No questions about Jar Jar.
Oh, never mind then.
Next, you, driving the rascal.
My question is for Mr. Roddenberry. Do you think your philosophy had an effect on the American public?
Yeah, I mean, why do you think the nerds are so peaceful?
Next question. Maybe from a girl? No? No girls here? Okay, then you with the large spectacles. No, the one without the pocket protector.
Hi, my question is for Mr. Lucas. Is your film series an allegory for World War II?
No, that's Spielberg's area. We split them up in the 70s. I get space, he gets World War II. I nearly sued him over E.T.
Next, you with the engineering jacket.
Hello, my question is for Mr. Lucas. Why is C-3PO gay?
Why not?
Oh yeah, touche.
Next question, you with the wrinkly forehead.
My question is for Gene Roddenberry. What is your favorite moment in Star Trek?
Probably the Tribbles. I genetically engineered them in my lab. They were later released as Furbies. Made me a fortune.
Time for one more question. Yes, you with the very normal appearance.
Well, that's not saying a lot in here. Hi, my question is for both of you. Isn't it possible that both of these pieces of art have merit but can never be compared objectively as they're two disparate ideas with values and pleasures within their own right. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Ludicrous.
Security, can we remove this man, please?
What?
That's all the time we have for this week. Join us again for another writer's Q&A.
I prefer Star Trek. You see, Spock reminds me of my own mother. Last up tonight, it's time for some dinner.
This is a nice place.
Yeah, really swanky. I love the paper necklaces in the bathroom.
You mean the toilet seat cover?
Pardon me, sir and madam. Can I get you some wine?
Yes, I think so.
And what would you like?
Actually, I'm pretty new at this. Do you have any recommendations?
Oh, of course. Are you thinking red or white?
White.
Well, for the whites, we have Reyes and Amaro. Those are both Argentinian, very light and summery, but way overpriced. We're also stocking from Germany, Brannen and Rieser. They both have fruity undertones and are naturally more rounder, bolder. Not much to look at, but with a great personality. Beyond that, we have the classic sharp Italian wines, Perpetua and Crema. Though be careful, because they can switch sides on you quite quickly. And we have some new Californian imports that are quite good if you're a cheap student.
I don't know. What do you think, darling?
Let's try the Brannen.
Oh, interesting choice, sir. Any particular requests with that?
Could I get it sharpened?
Oh, absolutely. Would you like it warmed at all?
Oh, yes. Please, add a little bit of brightness and warmth.
Oh, and in any colour?
No, but contrast, please. Oh, and could I add a fade to the end?
Oh, excellent choice. Vignette?
Yes, why not?
Oh, and would that be all?
Oh, can I just adjust that?
Oh, certainly. And for yourself, sir?
Exactly the same. I have no opinions of my own.
Oh, naturally. Thank you, sir. And I'll be back momentarily.
You can never go wrong with the vignette.
This is all very exciting. I'm getting to design my own wine.
And I'm back. Here are your customized photos for Instagram. We hope you enjoyed using our service and that you make your friends jealous of your fictional cultured lifestyle.
Oh, it will. My friends are morons.
I hate Instagram. It's taken all the skill out of stalking. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Kai Holmes, Ashley Follis, and Simon Welton.
Guest writing by Connor Neckleput.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise show. I hope you enjoyed that.
Who's your special friend now, you miserable git?
What did you think of this one, Connor?
I thought it was actually very strong. I particularly enjoyed a majority of it. The first half had a lot of substance to it. The second half was very flairful, I thought.
You mean the stuff you wrote?
No. I wish you say that.
Because that was basically the second half, because it was the Instagram and your rock and roller.
Yeah, man.
It was quite something.
My name's Jethro Babel, and I just can't stop talking.
I think my favourite voice this week I did was the nerd one.
Hello, how's it going? Yes, I've got another question there for Mr. Roddenberry. Where do you buy your pocket protectors?
That's a solid voice, so I like that one.
Yeah, it's my British train spotter voice. Not the Scottish drug fella. I'm talking about people actually.
I was just about to say, that sounds nothing like you, McGregor.
My favorite character in that is the one who just fights rather than does drugs. That guy is amazing.
That guy's, he's mental.
Well, growing up in England, I knew a couple of people like that.
Hey, in Scotland, baby.
Well, it's near. You know what I mean. It's the UK.
Don't tell them that.
We share culture, even though we don't admit it. All right, so the first track tonight, before we come back with the White Noise after show, is going to be Eastern Magnetics, and this is Shade. So we'll be back very soon for the White Noise after show, where we're going to have a bit of chit-chat, have a bit of fun, and we'll play some other wicked music. So stick around.
You can't change. Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
You have hair?
Do you want to help children in need? The UBC Cancer Association has an event for you. Cusford Cancer provides visitors with professional haircuts, with all proceeds going to the Canadian Cancer Society. With a donation of over 8 inches, the haircut is free. Hair donations are made into wigs for patients at the BC Children's Hospital. Last year we raised over $65,000, but this year we hope to break $100,000. Help make our dreams possible this February. Check out the UBC Cancer Association Facebook page for more details.
All right, we're back. You're listening to the White Noise After Show. This week hosted by Simon Welton, who's me, and Connor Neckelput is our special friend. How you doing, Connor?
Doing well. Yeah, pretty pleased that I got some guest writership credits in that last one.
It's about time. Seeing as I do always like to make sure everyone knows, you know, at least in the after show, we always, you know, I always like to, you know, point out that you put in there and you did some good work. But yeah, no, it was a good idea to do that. And I think we did it the best way. I thought it was hilarious.
It's fun. It's fun.
So I think the first topic we're going to talk about today, we're going to start
How's your menstrual cycle?
Oh, we talked about that last week. We can't talk about that twice.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was a while. I thought that was about 4 weeks back.
So I want to start with something that is topical rather than something involving the show, just because it came up today, which is, or yesterday rather. So Palin, Sarah Palin has backed Donald Trump to, you know, be the next president of the United States. Should we care? Does it matter? Because, you know, yeah, I'm not going to say too much. What do you think?
In the entire spectrum of the American political system, Sarah Palin is as of as much use as a menstruating donkey.
I was like listening to Ben Carson. It was that slow. Jesus. yeah, okay. That's nice. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I agree. I don't know if we have to say it like that, but...
I've actually just made the connection that I also just said Sarah Palin and menstruating.
Yeah. Was someone on your mind there? Yeah. Is it your time of the month? Is that what's going on?
Well, it probably is, actually. Yeah. We're getting really moody recently.
Well, yeah, men...
Just hate Sarah Palin.
It happens to men apparently every 3 months you have a hormonal sort of cycle change that causes distress.
Like all my hormones get replaced.
Well, I don't know exactly what goes on, but it's something arguably similar.
Does Donald Trump experience that once a week?
No, I don't think he's ever had it. I think because that's the thing, he's always on one setting. It's not like he goes up and down. Like he's just there all the time. Maybe he goes home and, like, you know, sits down.
Lies down, yeah.
Snuggles up, watches a romantic comedy and cries
and
a little.
Watches the news of himself.
Yeah, but let's not talk about Donald Trump anymore. He's annoying. What about Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders is on the rise. He's taken out Hillary point-wise. They're nearly even.
Punch by punch.
Yeah, he's just decking it. I mean, I want him to be president purely so Larry David keeps doing impressions of him forever. That would be amazing.
That's actually a fantastic question. So something that I've been thinking recently is... Bernie Sanders is an idealist. There's lots of great ideas, and that's fantastic. But in the American political system as it currently stands, if he were to win the election, and I think, I mean, at this stage, it looks like he has a fair chance of winning the Democratic nomination and then going on to potentially even take the entire election, because the Republican Party is in many ways both farcical and just totally sort of mixed. And I think a lot of people are going to be sort of... there's a lot of infighting, I sense, within the Republican Party. So if Bernie goes on to win, how does he do? That's the question I want to know. Like, how will he do?
Well, it all depends on what else happens, because it comes down to is do they have a functioning Congress and a functioning, like the representatives, has representatives and the Senate.
Yeah.
If they are both functioning as they should, he could do some big changes.
And at the moment, it's not the case, it seems. At least not with Obama as a president. There seems to be a gridlock between him and Congress.
I mean, because it basically happened after, he kind of had 6 months where he had some control. He may have even controlled both houses when he was elected.
Yeah.
But after that, he kind of missed the boat and lost. They lost the House of, I think it was the Senate first, and then they recently lost the House of Representatives, a majority in. So if Bernie walks into that without doing a bunch of executive orders, which he could do, and lots of presidents have done, but if he doesn't dare, if he's trying to be constitutional and he's trying to, you know, be idealistic in his approach. But I don't know. I get the sense that what he knows he's already going against the grain. So he knows that he'd have to force whatever his agenda is. So perhaps he's okay with that. Perhaps he's saying, this is what we got to do to get it done.
But maybe that's also just rhetoric into getting himself elected. I mean, and fair play to him if that is the case. I mean, you know, you try your best to get yourself there so you can make the decision that you need to. But so he's an idealist, and he says a lot of really encouraging, inspiring things. A lot of people like him for that reason, because he seems like a pragmatist, a realist, but still an idealist at the same time. Problem is that idealism going to genuinely be there and genuinely come out of that presidency if it happens? Or is that a tactic to get him there? And then he knows, because he's been around a while. He knows how to get things through. He knows how to work with the system,
That's a very cynical...
It's
a fair question. But
not even hating on him, I'm just saying...
I think that's a cynical view, and I think that hopefully he's more genuine than that. I mean, that's not to say that he won't say things to sort of manipulate the numbers and everything like everyone else does to make his ideas look good and his approach and his history. That's a big thing, is like, this may be his agenda now, but he may have done things in votes, because he's been around so long.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's done quite a few things voting-wise that you're like, well, that contradicts what you're saying now, but he wasn't running for president then, and who knows what else was in that bill that made him want
to
do
it's
things.
It's tough to know.
So, because that's the thing, like, you know, you might be the farm bill, but the farm bill can have a bunch of things to do with gun laws and a bunch of, you know, things that have nothing to do with farms in the same bill, and that's how, you know, especially when they get these crunch time bill passings where... You know, they have the way, you know, they've got 24 hours before the economy collapses. And then, yes, no surprise, a bunch of lobbyists push senators and House representatives people to put in things that have nothing to do with what they're voting on, but have substantial change within them. So, it'd be interesting to see. I'd love to see him as president, but it's a long way to go.
Yeah.
It's a long way to go.
And then the other interesting question is, therefore, as well, so if he doesn't, and the same applies to Hillary Clinton. I'm looking at the Democrats at the moment. But so if either of them, but particularly Bernie Sanders, if he doesn't win the nomination or doesn't win the election, does he fade away? Like, what happens
well,
next
no,
time now? I'm curious. I don't know.
He's been an independent for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's voted as an independent. So he will just continue being senator, and he would continue doing what he does. So, no, I don't think...
But you wonder if this is his 15 minutes. You wonder if it doesn't work.
Yeah, no.
He's committed so much resources to this campaign. If it doesn't work... Will it come up again next time? I mean, again, if you know,
Ron Paul did year after year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm not sure, but it would be interesting. He's older. I mean, as are most of them anyway. But I look at the Republican Party and I see a bunch of people like Jeb Bush who've been there, who have been in the running in the nominations for the last couple of elections. And I don't know the Democratic side so well myself.
Well,
I don't know if that'll be the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, John Kerry ran a few times. Clinton ran last time. You know, it's not uncommon for them to run a few times and then give up. I think the age factor might be a thing. Not in Sanders' favor, in that he may decide, if he doesn't get in this time, to perhaps retire in a couple of years.
Yeah,
because he, you know, I'm sure he'll feel like maybe he's hit a ceiling in his career.
And you don't know. Yeah, I mean, if Hillary Clinton gets elected, takes two terms. If a Republican gets elected, takes two terms. Like, yeah, so that 4 years is 8 years, and it's
that's
like,
what I mean. Like, and if another Democrat gets elected, then it's eight years because they will run next time, of course. So it's I think. I don't think he'll do two runs if he doesn't win this time. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next subject, which the other big... It's not as big a deal here, but worldwide it was a big deal, is there was they've uncovered that there has, in fact, been some match-fixing at Wimbledon. Not among, I believe, any of the top five, but arguably top 10, top 20, there has been some match-fixing. Only, like, three... but there's a huge shock across the pond and in a lot of other tennis mad countries. But should we care? Or is it a big deal? Do we, you know, what do we think? Like, because I mean, match fixing is a problem in other sports. Like, it was a big problem in Italian soccer for a while.
Yeah, I mean, football's been a little bit
and in
recently.
Russia, like, and it's non surprisingly, it's usually countries that have a large organized crime. Sort of still existing, like, well, they exist everywhere, but one that's interested in match fixing, which is the Italian mafia and the Russian mafia do a lot.
Malaysian betting syndicates.
Yeah, exactly. So there's also a lot of interest, and a lot of money in it. But yeah, like, should we be outraged, or really is it like, okay?
I think it's one of those things where, I mean, I'm not a huge tennis fan myself. I don't really watch Wimbledon. But I know its reputation. And I know it's a big sport, and I know a lot of people care about it. And to England, it is a bit of a national institution in many ways.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, but I look at that in the same way that I'd look at maybe celebrity, in the sense that I don't necessarily know why people like it, although I respect it. But what I want from it is integrity. I want to believe that it's good intentioned and that it's fair and equal. So the moment I see like a celebrity like, off their head doing crazy drugs or you know, drink driving or something like that, no matter like why they're famous, like, you lose that they lose integrity in your eyes. And they can make it up maybe, but you expect something that's been put on a pedestal and heralded by so many people that it needs to have that sense of equality and that it's being looked after properly and that it represents the values of a modern industrialized. State.
Well, I think I would. What I think I would pull out of that, which is agreeing with you, is the fact that if you are making money off your public personality and your public image, and then you throw that in people's faces, then you deserve some repercussions from that because you're making a living off your image. If you don't want to make a living off your image, then don't do it. and go be a lawyer or do something where it doesn't matter, it doesn't affect anybody else, and you're not you're not the idol of any young people, you're not a public figure. But if you choose that role in life, whether it's being a sportsman or a rock star or television personality,
YouTube personality.
I guess we have to count them now. Fine. Then it's you do have some obligation to the public. And that's just the way it's part of the whole package of it. But let's move on. One more sort of question that's in the news again is, of course, that the nominations for this year's Oscars have been criticized for not having enough diversity in the nominations, because the two major films got overlooked was Straight Outta Compton. I didn't actually see that one, but it's a biopic of NWA. And then, of course, The Creed, which was written and directed by a young 29-year-old black director. And I did see that one. It was very good as far as Rocky films go. I'd say it's as good as, at least the second one. Because the first and second ones are revered. The others are a bit naff. So I think, it's up there with them. It has depth. It has stuff outside of the ring that, adds to a fuller story. The soundtrack's great. The acting's excellent. Of course, Sylvester Stallone actually won the Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor for his role in that. So there has been some, there does seem to be, and critics have all said it's very good. So it is a bit weird that those films didn't get nominated. I mean, I think it's unfair to call them racist because they've had plenty of winners, African winners, going all the way back to Sidney Poitier. I think it was then a long time till the next one, but there's, best actors have gone to people like Denzel Washington's won it.
Jamie Foxx won it.
Has won it. Halle Berry won Best Actress or Best Female Actor now, I think is what they meant to call it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think they're racist?
I mean, I'd agree with you. I wouldn't think, and I don't know any of them, so I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I wouldn't imagine in this day and age, they are all old white men, to be fair, but I wouldn't imagine that they've been being like intentionally racist. The way I see it is that I see it as more of like, it's just a club, isn't it? It's a bunch of people who get together, who have similar views, whatever. It's a bit of a circle jerk, let's be honest. Like, if you're not in the club, then you send a list of, like, when was the last time, like, a real dark horse, like, won? I mean, usually, like, everyone who gets in there and wins, I mean, with the exception of maybe Leo DiCaprio, like, they're big stars, they're big names. I don't follow it so well, but...
Well, there's breakout stars who win.
Yeah.
Because there's been child actors that have won. Jennifer Lawrence won it when she was dead young. So it does go to sort of breakout roles.
Yeah,
sometimes.
But I think for the most part, though, it is still a very sort of intimate kind of group who do the selecting and who are considered.
Well,
and
it's, so it's voted on by actors and directors and people within.
Isn't it a certain number of them? There's like a sort of invite-only
kind of
list.
Yeah, it's like 1,176.
Yeah, I mean, and so it's not the system. Yeah, the system is. I'm sure has. Sort of checks and balances to try and make sure that people have their own views heard. But I still imagine it's a bit more, it's like a club that, unfortunately, and perhaps a representative of American society still today, despite the fact that it isn't necessarily, although at times, overtly racist, there still exist those sort of levels of social cohesion which have developed over centuries and sort of remain today. So I think it is a gradual process.
Yeah.
That will happen. And I don't know how many, like, for instance, Asian American actors and actresses or female actors have been nominated before. I haven't heard much of a stir about that. Maybe there are a lot of them. That might be the reason.
But I mean, I think what it really comes down to is not so much the Academy's fault, but maybe a wider problem within Hollywood of who gets parts and how many black people are casted in major roles, how many Asian people are casted in major roles. Because I think it is arguable that this year there just wasn't enough films made that were high, excellent writing and big budget, that are sort of Oscar-worthy movies. Not enough of them were maybe made with people, black people or Asian people in those roles. And that maybe is the more systemic issue that we should look at, rather than just, well, they didn't get nominated for the Oscars. But yeah, maybe that's more a systemic problem of, well, there just isn't enough people getting roles. But, you know, it's tough because you're like, well, how do you change that? And to change it by force it is not a very American thing to do.
No.
So I don't see that being, I don't know how you change it except for just sort of pressure within the media and social media. And yeah, people will bend to that. And but that's not to say there hasn't been shifts in the right direction, because of course we have seen, lots of leading men and females that have been black in excellent movies in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Idris Elba is in everything.
Oh yeah,
and
he's
fantastic.
He's hot stuff these days. Yeah, maybe the next James Bond.
Yeah, and you know, one of the leads in the new Star Wars movie, which is the biggest movie of the year.
Yeah.
The Tarantino movie had Samuel Jackson, which I know is in every one of them, but you can't deny he's black. So it's, you know, there are. It is being but even Tarantino gets like criticized for being racist all the after Django Unchained.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you. But I wonder as well, and I mean, complete postulation here. I don't know facts. I don't know the numbers, but I wonder how many, for instance, in auditions, in casting, how many people of each race come forward in audition. I wouldn't be surprised. Again, I'm happy to be proven wrong because this is only my sort of theorizing, but I wouldn't be surprised if more people who audition just are white anyway, or Caucasian anyway. I feel like certainly amongst maybe the African-American community, because of that, because of the nature of the relationship between at least African-Americans and sort of Caucasian-Americans and that history, it still is the case that mainly African-Americans and now Hispanic-American immigrants as well tend to occupy the lower classes for the most part, generalizing here. And I imagine within those classes there's less of an initiative or less of a push for parents to go, yes, my son, my daughter, go and follow your dreams. I imagine, again, like generalizing, but I imagine that they'd be more like, hey, like, learn some good skills, go get yourself a good job. Whereas in the more middle class sort of Caucasian American communities, there's a bit more of that. Well, we've done well for ourselves. Hey, child, like, I love you so much. Go follow your passions. Well, it's easier for you. I wonder if that might be something to do with it, maybe.
One thing that may be easier to actually, you know, work out statistically is I'm sure that if there is a trend of minorities being more highly represented in lower income families, well, if they're living in low income areas, that means they're going to low income schools, which are less likely to have as good a funding for the arts.
Yeah.
And so if they're not getting a taste of acting and theater at a young age, because of the, you know, they go to an area where the schools aren't funded properly, which I know is an ongoing problem in America in a lot of areas. There's a lot of bad,
and often it can become easy to find employment in other way, in other sort of maybe more illegal means that seem enticing and rewarding as well, despite regardless of their immoral kind of natures as well.
The problem is, unlike music, which is something that's easy to be a self-starter in, whereas, you know, going acting, you've got to either, you know, you got to have funding to make a movie, and
yeah,
even
you
if you
have an audience and pay for that audience.
And it's getting easier and easier now, but that might be that might be a reason why you don't see the sort of same grassroots sort of, because like music has always been a huge part of black culture going back to,
in rock and roll,
well,
jazz.
I'm talking about basically coming out of Ethiopia at the start of human race. That was already basically a thing. But it's been easier for years to sort of start a band, you know, at least, you know, if we're talking on the 20th century, than it would be to make a movie. It comes down to economics. More funding for the arts.
Yeah, but and also, I mean, to slightly digress from that, I think that's an excellent point, though. I think you make a very good point in that those opportunities just aren't presented there. But, I mean, is the solution that you take the ethnic makeup of the United States and ignoring socioeconomic factors, although I would say that'd be folly to, but in trying to achieve true representation let's just say Hollywood or the film industry, there should more or less, within a certain sort of percent difference, there should be X amount of people representing that same X amount of people in Hollywood. So if the Caucasian percent of the American people, about 60%, for instance, there should be about 60% Caucasian men or women in Hollywood, and therefore if there's 30% African Americans, and there should be 30%. If you want to work it that way, I don't know how the numbers add up. I mean, I'm sure they're still very skewed in favor of Caucasians.
I wouldn't doubt that. But that's what I say, because it isn't possible in the culture of America to do a heavy top-down sort of adjustment of those numbers. The only way I can see is through empowering people to follow art and to fall in love with it and follow that passion. And if you are a fantastic actor, of any culture, any creed, you will, you know, hopefully get your opportunity. Because, you know, I do think people are getting more, you know, sort of better at these things, and that isn't as much of an issue anymore. And you know, as I say, so many movies with black leading roles have made so much money in the last few years that people in charge of Hollywood shouldn't have any doubts anymore about putting excellent actors into their films. So yeah, I hopefully it's moving in the right direction. But I think only through adjusting the arts funding. Mm-hmm. Is there a legitimate way, at least in the American culture?
And if I may just have a last word before I be putting a song, because I know you're itching to.
Okay.
So I've just looked up on Wikipedia right now, and this is suggesting, based on Wikipedia data from the census, I believe, that the population of America, the USA, in 2015, is 63.7% Caucasian. Then it's 12.2% African American or hit black. 16.4% Hispanic or Latino. So just those quick ones there. So that's already... Caucasian way outnumbers the rest of them, really. It's 66% to about less than 20 apiece for the next two major groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then combining that knowledge with what we've just sort of said about, that there's a lack of ink, because there's often a propensity for those ethnic groups, Hispanics and African Americans, to find themselves in the lower classes and therefore have less opportunities to be exposed to drama, to the arts. That, therefore, if you would even assume in a perfect world that, therefore, 20% or less of Hollywood actors and actresses should be black, and about 20% or less should be Hispanic. Taking those factors into combination, even less than those percent would theoretically be expected if you do this on like a numbers game. And in that way, you sort of think, well, if that's the way we want to do it, and we're not saying we should, there should be societal change to increase equality throughout the social classes. And yet, anyone who has a talent should be given that on their talent and not their race, unless characters are specifically written because of historical context or whatever. But that's an interesting look at it, because that actually would suggest that Caucasian actors and actresses should severely outnumber the rest. And in that,
the numbers might not be that far off.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not saying that is necessarily the case, but just looking at the numbers very quickly, it seems like it could be feasible suggestion.
Yeah, and I say, it could just be a funny year. It could be next year that there is far more diversity. I mean, 12 Years a Slave won the best film like a couple of years ago, so it's not like... The Help, that was another good film a couple of years ago. Precious won awards. That was a really good film. I think maybe we just got a funny year, and this is it's easy target because of the amount of tension that has occurred in America in the last couple of years over race. Maybe it's not as bad as people.
It's worth paying attention to, but yeah.
Anyway, let's play a song. We're going to play Soul Jazz Orchestra. And this is Shock and Awe.
Fast time. This Saturday, January 23rd, Party Well presents UBC's biggest fundraising party ever, FutureFest 2.0. 100% of the proceeds fund the construction of wells in Ethiopia through Charity Water. There will be an epic lineup and holograms made by UBC students. Happening at 8:30 p.m. in the Great Hall of the Nest, come get your tickets from the Party Well fam or online while they last, so you can have the time of your life while helping save a life. Check out Party Well on Facebook for all the information.
Playing your favorite songs for 13 years. The morning what? The morning after whatever you did last night. Live music, local talents, and music you won't hear anywhere else. The Morning After Show, every Tuesday, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
All right. We're back on the White Noise After Show. My name is Simon Welton, and I'm joined by special friend, Connor Nettlebutt.
Special friend!
You just deafened poor people at home there.
So I thought our listeners were very rich. I thought we only had sort of upper-class clientele.
Sorry? I said deafened.
Poor people at home are being deafened, what?
I said the poor people at home, as in, like, the unfortunate people at home.
Why are you designating them unfortunate?
Jesus. I thought you were privately educated. Obviously, didn't work. But.
Yes, I taught myself a book in the corner of my room. Yeah, that's what you mean.
Okay. All right. So I actually have one more topical question before we go on to the show questions. So, obviously, we lost some big stars in the last couple of weeks. David Bowie. Alan Rickman. So, I'm making a prediction, and I want your opinion on my prediction. I think before the end of this year...
2016, yeah.
Yeah. The Queen will die. Elizabeth. I think it's it. This is it. She's going to die this year. That's going to be the big one this year.
If I may, Nostradamus, why do you think in the wake of these already momentous deaths...
I just got a feeling, man.
Got a feeling?
I just got a feeling that, you know, she's just old enough now. How old is she?
87?
Going with 87?
87 or 89.
She is 89.
I
guess she could live. Actually, I don't know.
I mean,
well, her mum lived, like, the Queen Mother lived to be 95.
Let's also not forget that she has almost certainly has access to all of the most advanced and best scientific practices the world has to offer in this very day and for the rest of this year. I mean, there are some things in age, as your body begins to degenerate, that you can't help. I mean, your body sometimes just can't withstand certain surgeries and whatever. But until that is the case, they can afford it. They could keep her alive on, like, tubes and things forever. Like, if as long as they kept doing it. I feel like maybe you have an accident, maybe, but I don't know. I don't think this is her year.
All right, fair enough. I think it's fair. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a silly argument because who knows what's going to happen. But I just got a funny feeling. So let's put that on ice. It's on record now.
All right, it is on record.
By the end of the year, I might be able to celebrate that pat on the back.
Settle that deal.
Okay, so questions from the show. A big one is Star Wars or Star Trek?
I have to admit, I'm pretty ambivalent. I've never really seen Star Trek. I've seen the new films, and that doesn't count because, you know, all the diehards, you know, the first series was the best. I know that. I've watched all the Star Wars films, the prequels, like, maybe twice each, with the exception of the Phantom Menace, which I saw 8 times when I was 8. I'm not sure that counts. I've seen the prequel. Sorry. I've seen the original, twice, rather.
You've only seen them twice?
I've seen them twice, yeah. Because I watched them once and then sort of forgot about them and then rewatched them recently before I watched the new Star Wars film.
Yeah.
So I have watched them all, whereas I haven't watched much Star Trek. And I enjoy them. But I'm not going to have to go like, oh, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Like, I enjoy them, but they also don't make a huge imprint in my life. I'm excited to see the next one now that I've seen number 7. Mm. It's an interesting storyline. I'm engaged.
Apparently George Lucas hated it.
Oh, yeah. Just like any sort of lead singer who leaves a band gets replaced and the band as well would go like, oh, I hate you guys, you bastards. Like, I mean, if he went, oh, yeah, that was fantastic, that was exactly, like, well, why weren't you the one directing
well,
it?
Well, like, yeah, I mean, he could be a bit humble about it.
I guess he doesn't need to be as scathing, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah.
But I couldn't imagine that on the inside he's anything less than, like,
I mean, it's got to be weird, though, having created something yourself and then just letting someone else... Like, paint, you know, especially when it's that successful to begin with.
Yeah, it'd be like as if J.R.R. Tolkien wrote half the Lord of the Rings, half of his sort of omnibus of Middle-earth, and then suddenly some other guy decided writing the rest of it, and then it was like, well, and you could argue it in the films. You go, oh, Peter Jackson's, like, taken his work and done whatever with it. J.R.R. Tolkien's dead, so it's a bit easier in that regard.
But it's a different medium.
But you're right, and it also is, yeah, and there are different differences.
It'd be written, you know, I mean, didn't his son finish one of
his
books?
Like C.R. Tolkien, okay, Chris Tolkien, like that, did revise, I think, quite a large amount of his work, actually. Wouldn't necessarily a lot of it's originally written, but he did pay attention to his father's work. It was very engaged, and I think possessed a lot of the same initiative that his father undoubtedly passed on to him.
Yeah, but didn't he actually, like, finish one of the books that
I think
Tolkien
I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than one, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah, oh, I forgot what it was called now, though.
I mean, there's loads of them, like The War of the Jewels, Silmarillion, all the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, the Silmarillion, I think, was the one that he actually released with, like, his own sort of ending to it, I think.
But maybe I tried reading the Silmarillion once, and I just, like, that's a book I genuinely have to take notes. Because all the characters are, like, 3 letters off, and they're all L, and then it's so complicated. I need, like, maps and, like, mind maps and... characters and like family trees. It's that intense.
I know people who that's their favorite Tolkien book.
I couldn't understand that. The Hobbit trumps it for me. Love The Hobbit. It's a kid's book, right? But it's easier to read than most of the rest. But I also find it really engaging and just kind of it has that kind of humorous and kind of fun almost aspect to it, even amongst the kind of darker bits.
Yeah, I mean, it's always an interesting thing in that. I don't think that a great book has to be a difficult read.
Oh, no, I would absolutely agree with that.
You know, that's one of the reasons I like Kurt Vonnegut is one of my favorite authors, because it's very readable, it's very funny, and it is insightful. It has, as we've talked about this on the show before, it's got bags of philosophy in it. And it doesn't, but it without you being like, I have no bloody idea.
Yeah, it's what like, he's yeah, on about. Easy to understand, it's apprehendable.
Yeah. So, okay, so you don't really have any opinion. Well, my opinion...
Yeah. Okay, I'll just go Star Wars, because I haven't watched enough Star Trek.
Yeah, see, I'm going to go with Star Trek, because and most of it I explained in that sketch, which is that, yeah...
It wasn't biased, was it?
Just a touch in there. But yeah, it's all about the fact that he was talking about philosophy, and that's what good science fiction is meant to be about.
It is.
And that's pure and simple what that is about, whereas... Star Wars is, you know, it's not a bad film, but it's just a bit
film.
Of light fantasy sort of, you know, there's a bit of idea of good and evil. But, I mean, come on, good and evil is such a childish idea. There's no such thing as good and evil in the world. There is so much gray in the world. And yes, there is that sort of like, oh, well, people change between actions within the films, but it still was like, well, he was good, he was bad, and now he's good, or, well, he was good, and now he's bad. It was never like, oh, well, this person's a complex human being with a range of emotions and sometimes acts not in the best regards, but that doesn't make them necessarily evil. You see what I mean? Like,
I do. I see what you mean. I would go as far as say, though, I think on one level you can draw, any good story has to have certain relatable ethical or philosophical ideas in it. That's what in many ways makes a good and engaging TV program or film or book or any medium of sort of art. But actually I wonder if there's more depth to it than that, because I read something recently that sort of went, that made me sort of like rethink things, and it was actually a serious critique of the Jedi Order in Star Wars. And of course the Jedis are the, as you've just sort of said, you know, the good guys, Sith are the bad guys. It is very binary like that. And you're right, there's a lot more grey in the world. And I think I appreciate shows and mediums that actually do describe that and show that. But this was critiquing the Jedi Order as, like, I mean, comparing it essentially to, like the church, really, like a bunch of, like, really, like, sort of celibate and restricted, rule-following, by-the-book kind of old guys who, like, take children when they're young and, like, drill them in this only one way to live life. And actually restricting any kind of idea of, like, free thinking or critical thought of just... And then taking that idea and saying, well, actually, are these guys actually that good? They seem kind of tyrannical, actually. I mean, they say they're for good, and they don't use some of the more evil powers, but actually, they're not necessarily, like, paragons of virtue themselves. They exist in this weird order that seems very fascist in many regards.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that's the intention of the author. That's the thing, is I feel like the strictness is all within the society is all about the warrior mindset that is in Hidden Fortress, because it that's what Star Wars is a ripoff of Hidden Fortress with lightsabers and stars. I think Hidden Fortress has more depth actually than Star Wars did. It's stripped away from it, but it's just meant to be this like samurai warrior mentality of discipline and you know, the practice of taking people away from their parents at a young age is common in other societies where they have sort of monks and other sort of, like, it's usually a religious thing.
Religious-inspired kind
of orders. But, you know, warrior monks in Thailand, and you see, like, sort of training similar to that in Ecuador, in the Amazon, groups do that. So there's all sorts of examples of that, and that's really what it's paralleling. I don't think... that it's meant to be intentionally like making the Jedi's dynamic. I think it's actually quite one-dimensional.
Maybe.
You know, that's the intention. You can try and draw more out of it, but, you know, I just think you're not you personally, but I think if you're trying to do that, then you try to find more there than really is. And it's funny, because that happens a lot as a writer, though, in that I've done this where I've written something, and I've written that the way I wrote it, because I'm like, well, that's entertaining, and that's funny, and that's sort of my thought behind that as some subtle commentary. But then you give it to someone, and they're telling you this thing they saw in it that was brilliant, and this like extra layer of subtext that I had never intended in the first place. Didn't think about that at all. And you're like, sure, mate.
Or you write a very subtle joke, and they completely miss over it. And you're like, that was brilliant. It was amazing. It was.
Does that happen to you a lot?
Didn't work hard enough.
Does that happen to you sometimes?
Yeah, maybe.
Sometimes I'm like, you know, without slapping them over the head with it, you gotta lay it out in a way that's clear. That's the thing. It's hard. You can be subtle, but it's got to be blatant while being
highbrow.
It's got to be, you know, it's difficult. All right, then we're gonna play probably
Jenga.
We'll play one more song, and then we'll come back, do a little bit more chit chat, and then we'll head out. I think around 12:30.
Yeah, I need my beauty sleep.
Oh, I know. So this is Mocha Only with Yeah, Hey.
That ain't a my job, get my bagel right, and everything that I ask for, we able, right? A calm night, new year, I'm a satellite. This is for my Coover Groovers and Seattleites. Peace to Illa and what up to the potato guys. We gonna spin the fable right, cause the world likes torts like a missile. We on this, we armed with serious vibes and gold like the Grand Night coming, cause we put the funky drumming. 100 miles and running, find us at the summit. Having fun with just hips that wanna come together just like a one witch. On which style do you prefer to hurt? I'm good with the word, you gotta concur. So come along with the song like it's drum or guitar. I want the one over there and the one that's with her. Face jacket and my Van Dorm is going for more, so just pour me endorsements enormous, and my vibes like none you ever heard, so adore this. Before this, you're acting just like a tortoise. Before this, you never knew what my sword is. A worldwide magician, you couldn't afford this. To expand your tiny world regardless, I'm here now, Dorcas. My dish is flawless, so give me all the soakers, my vibes are strongest. And love is a law, which should be the focus. So shut the fuck up and just hand me my thermos. I love you, I promise. You suck at me, if I, you know, I love the milk you, cause my love's the hardest. The artist, formerly known as Mo. Oh.
Best in bluegrass music, plus classic country, Cajun rockabilly, western swing, and whatever jumps off the shelves at us. Tune in every Tuesday morning at 6:30 for Pacific Pickin' with your host, Arthur Berman.
And I'm Andrea.
The lovely Andrea, who will also provide you with our concert calendar and every bit of news and information you can possibly need. And as if that wasn't enough, there's a warm-up show at 6 featuring a little bit of a wider variety of roots and branches of bluegrass music. So tune in each morning, 6 for the warm-up show, 6:30 for the main show, Pacific Pickin' on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
For over 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting involved.
Shadows fade.
All right, there you go. That was Traces with Water Table. Yeah, I'm really digging that. It's only four tracks on that self-titled album by
it's
Traces.
It's good. It's a good EP.
It is. So definitely check that one out. So we've got time for one more quick question, and then we are going to depart for the night. So my last question for you, sir, is, you know, myself and you are both quite far into our degrees now.
Yeah.
The light
years,
at the end of the tunnel is starting to get a little clearer. But I wonder if you could, right this second, redo your time at UBC, would you take a different degree and which one?
That's a very good question, actually. And I don't think I would, not this one. I wonder if... I feel like I should maybe, I mean, because I like video games, and in the modern world, computers are so important. I feel like doing something with computer programming is a skill that I should learn, and a skill that will be helpful for myself in the future, and potentially even, like, children or other, like, people that I know in any kind of industry. It's a very employable skill, although a lot of people do it. I wonder if I shouldn't have at least made some efforts to try and learn how to code or how to program or to understand computers and that kind of machinery. I'm very happy with my degree. I've had a great time so far. I've learned a lot. I'm sure I would have done some classes over again, maybe, you know, put a bit more effort in here and there, or just, you know, really worked hard for that one exam that I kind of fudged a little bit. But overall, no, I'm pretty happy with where I am. And I think, yeah, besides maybe trying a bit more, trying to do a bit more stuff, maybe become more clubs, maybe keep up with it. More electives, more wisely chosen, perhaps. But overall, I'm pretty happy. How about yourself?
There's definitely a couple of other degrees that I would have been interested in. And maybe, yeah, I mean, because, like, there are parts of philosophy I really like.
Yeah, you speak about it a lot, and it's always really inspiring, because I can tell you're really passionate about some of the things you're learning, and you speak of it in a very, in a way that demonstrates you're well-read in it, you're really interested in it, you're interested in teaching other people about that, or helping to people to spread the word, those ideas.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is, like, I'm really interested and sort of, I get really into the material in about, like, 30% of it. And the rest of it, I, like, honestly want to sometimes tear my eyes out. Like, when we get into metaphysics and epistemology and just things that I just don't... They're so abstract or
like
so...
Pedantic.
Irrelevant. Yeah, yeah. You're just like, who fucking cares? So I think if I could do a different degree, the one subject that I've never done a bad class, but maybe it's because I haven't done enough of them yet, is history. I always found history fascinating. If I was going to teach, I'd teach history. So I wish I'd probably done at least a minor in it. I did a minor in psychology, and yeah, some classes have been fantastic, but only enough of them that I could have probably taken it as them as electives and enjoyed them just as much. But you know, I don't regret the degree I did. I hope it's made me you know, sort of better.
It's made you a more round person.
Or at least, you know, it's helped my writing. Because that's why I came to school. Was not so, you know, I do have the back of my idea of like, oh, I'll go to law school if I can get in. But I want to be a writer. That's why I do this show. And part of that, of coming to school, was like, I want to go to do a degree that makes me a better writer, because it gives me depth and themes and ideas to my writing. And that's something that I worried that just doing a creative writing degree, I would know the structure and I would know, you know,
format, but not format. As a substance.
But yeah, but it would be as unsubstantial as a lot of other major films that do get made, but I don't enjoy them. And I want to be making the sort of films that I'd be proud of. And because they would be, you know, in the same mold as the people I've looked up to in as writers. So yeah, so that's sort of why I did the degree, and I think that still will come out of it. But I do think maybe I would have enjoyed just a few more classes if I'd done more history.
See, that's the thing that I like about my degree, is I'm doing international relations, and that's sort of, you sort of go, well, what does that mean? That's the point. What does it mean? It's a really broad subject that encompasses geography, political science, economics, history, area studies. Sort of different sort of like feminist sort of First Nation theories and bits and pieces, a lot of stuff that gets packed into it, but in that it allows me, particularly this degree here at UBC, allows me to be very choicey with what my requirements are, so I can go, oh hey, I like to do history courses, and I do, as I share that with you, and I've decided to do a lot of geography and history courses as my kind of elective requirements, or within the requirements, but the ones where I have choice. I haven't done really any economics classes besides like the one I needed to do. So I've been lucky in that regard that while pursuing a broad topic, I've been able to sort of have a slight specialization in it without having to declare anything different. And I feel like I've got a lot out of it. I've had some really cool classes here,
yeah,
such as History of the Indian Ocean World, Modern European Geography. Taking classes right now. I'm taking a class on Scandinavian crime fiction, which is all about actually like, understanding Scandinavia as almost through satire or through social commentary through these books, actually, which isn't as a lit course rather than like history course. But yeah, I find it all very interesting. I've really enjoyed the classes I've taken. So I understand where your sort of longing for that sort of stuff might come from.
Thanks, yeah. And I agree with you. Like, that's one thing I liked about my philosophy degree was that my electives were pretty open. I chose, because you can choose a path, which is like you do some economics and other things in first year to try and make your education well-rounded. But I was like, no, I'm going to take whatever I want. So I took anthropology and I took my six-credit history course. It was a one-year on European 20th century history, which was fascinating. And it was taught by someone who was Irish, which was good because they're from a neutral country, so it wasn't a Western bias at all. He was like, yeah, no, World War II was basically won by the Russians, which is true. After Stalingrad, they were never going to win. They destroyed themselves in an attempt to win the Eastern Front. But yeah, go to the library if you want to know more. But hindsight's 2020. And the thing is, I might still... Actually, if I ever decide to become a teacher, I might end up going back to school and doing all my history credits, which would be another year, and then I could get a Bachelor of Education and teach. So who knows? Maybe I'll do it in the future. Or maybe I'll do it when I'm 65 and it's free. And
when you're a famous writer who's made lots of money, you can afford to go back to university. Like
do like six
like
masters.
Chevy Chase in Community, just kick around and...
Yeah, that sounds pretty sweet, actually. But okay, yeah, we're going to let you guys go. It's the 12:34. We should have been out of here ages ago. So we're going to play one more song for you of our choice, and then the ghost DJ is on. Don't come in. He's terrifying. Yeah, Connor, he's way scarier than that, mate.
The track, Simon.
So we'll be back next week at 11 p.m. as always on a Wednesday night for a half hour of sketch comedy, and then as we always do, we're going to follow it with the White Noise After Show. And unfortunately, yes, Connor will be back next week with me. But, he's my special friend. So we got to have him back. But this is Run With The Kittens, Something New.
Enjoy sleeping.